Mahatimarandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Taksunum Vritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sthapadantikam Vansha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevascha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasave Gaurabhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is part two. But really what it is I do part one, and then I understand the subject more deeply, so I give it again. Not really. But I'll give a little... Some of you are here. I'll give a little... Maybe a test. I quoted from St. Augustine. And St. Augustine said that in the pursuance of our spiritual practices, there's three most important items. Allegra... Humility, the first, humility, and humility. So, and as you remember, I described a struggle that I had. And the struggle was I really wanted a good definition of humility. And I described how important good definitions are. Because if you understand things... If you understand things superficially... If you understand things superficially... Then you can't really apply them properly. And then in the... Let's say if you don't understand what humility is, then you'll be afraid to have self-confidence. If you don't understand what humility is, then you'll think a lack of self-esteem is humility. Or you'll get into a codependent relationship and you think you're humble. So if you thought, like, what does humility mean? Basically, it's defined as feeling very... unqualified, feeling very modest. If you think about it, we even see in some of the Vaishnava scriptures, like Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's descriptions of the ultimate limit of humility. Right? Hari Das Thakur, when Lord Chaitanya came at the end of his life, to Hari Das Thakur, what Hari Das Thakur say? He said, if an insignificant ant like me dies, what is... And he felt it actually from his heart. But those same type of feelings and that same kind of understanding, feeling unqualified and feeling very modest, that's the same definition, that's the same... qualities that someone who has lack of self-esteem exhibits. It's the same qualities that someone who is in a codependent, you know, the mood, being very humble, always serving, seeing things according to another person's desires. So a good definition, it can't be too broad, and it can't be too narrow. Like if your definition of humility is too broad, then you'll think that a lack of self-esteem is humility. If your definition of humility is too narrow, then you'll be afraid to be bold. Was Prabhupada humble? If you have the wrong definition of humility, sometimes they would call Srila Prabhupada, what is it? Sainapati Prabhupada. You know what Sainapati means? The general. Can the general be humble? And we see in so many different areas, if people have a superficial understanding of something, then they misapply it. In the name of being selfless, you neglect yourself because your understanding is superficial. In the name of humility, you get into codependent relationships. So I thought, really, it's important. And that was my struggle. Because I was really trying to find, you know, what is that quality of humility that will encompass someone who has self-confidence and will exclude someone who lacks self-esteem. Or in that way. So, that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I tried to do last time. And I think today, I mean, in the class, I want to redefine it again. I think my understanding is even a little bit more clear. And it's one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada said he wanted his devotees, he wanted his followers to study his books from different angles, so that they get a very, very clear understanding. That's what the term, the term for metaphysical knowledge in Krishna consciousness, basically, in one sense, is called sambandhyan. And what it means is balanced understanding. If you don't have a true understanding of renunciation, then you'll give up things that you need in the name of renunciation. If you have an unbalanced understanding of the role of attachment, then you'll take things that have no value to your life and spiritual life in the name of karma yoga. So it's very good. And I found this exercise myself was very, very helpful to me. It reminded me of a verse in the Upanishads where it described how you actually become realized. First you hear something, then you think about it, then you apply it, then you eventually see it. So it's necessary to have some kind of thoughtfulness. Very important to be thoughtful. In bhakti, you have to be faithful, because if you're not faithful, you'll exclude the effort to understand things that are beyond your limited frame of reference and perception. But if you're not thoughtful, you'll accept things blindly, even if you don't understand them. And often, they'll be wrong. So, it's a good exercise. But I don't want to do all the work. So, I'm going to have you do some of the work. I need you to look at... So, I just want to ask you, just... because I think with this kind of exercise and this type of classes, although I've done a lot of work, I think it has to be a mutual understanding, a mutual depth and analysis of this. It was nice last week. We gave some nice examples of humility. Because a lot of times you need to see the philosophy in life. You need to see the example of it to actually see how it's actually applied in the proper way. And to see the beauty of it. Because sometimes when we say humble, we don't have a concept of its beauty, of its love. I told a story, I'll tell it again. I think I need to tell a story just at the beginning. It's one of my favorite stories, and I was there. Satyaraj remembers that an old sadhu used to come visit us, Mangal Maharaj. And he was, in 1950, Prabhupada asked him to go to America. But his guru said, you have service to do here in India. So he came later on. And we were in the Brooklyn Temple. He used to come, and he used to sit for all the classes, even though he's very elderly and very learned. So he became my friend. So when I was in India, he gave me an invitation to the Tirubhav Titi Mahotsava. That means the disappearance festival of his guru, when his guru left the world. So I went to go see the festival for his guru, and I remember there, it was in the Gaudiya Math by the train station. That's famous in Vrindavan. So I went there, and then Mangal Maharaj said, would you like to visit Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj? He was called the older Puri Maharaj. He was 101 at the time. Did you ever see someone 101? There. Eyelids are like drooping over their eyes. He's very humble. He barely could. And he was sitting there. And I told this story. It was such a beautiful thing. And then it was a fast day. Fast till noon. And I went upstairs to see him. And everybody was in a room. And he was just bent over. And then, at a particular time, someone ran in and said, it's time for the feast. All the devotees must come. And then there was a stampede outside of the room. And I was kind of sitting there because it had to be translated to me. They said it in Bengali. Otherwise, I would have been the first one. So I kind of looked up, and then I saw it. Then I looked up, and I saw he was walking. And you ever see a person who's 101 walk with a cane, slowly, with great pain? And it's downstairs. And then his servant says, Maharaj, you don't have to go. You know we'll bring your food to you. And then he said, and it was so beautiful. And I remember because there was a richness in his voice that came from the heart. When people are truly humble, not just externally humble and imitating it, but sometimes, especially in India, an old sadhu, I remember that one time when Dr. Fakir Mohan, so old, we asked him to give class. He was 85. So learned. And he bowed down to each of the monks there, each of the sannyasis there. And I remember he just grabbed my hand and said, bless me, I know nothing. Bless me, I know nothing. You can't imagine how much he knows. He lectured on one verse which said, this temporary material world is full of suffering. Take shelter of the holy name as your only business. He lectured on that one verse for 3 years. You don't know how learned these people are. Bless me, I know nothing. True from the heart. True from the heart. So so they said to Bhakti Pramod, you don't have to. You don't have to go. You know we'll bring the food up to you. And then he said something so nicely. When the Vaishnavas, when the devotees command,
I must obey. It's so humble, so wanting to accept authority. Real authority, not just someone who is above you, but the principles of the divine, the principles of morality, the principles of bhakti, the principles of truth. So much wanting and feeling good about it. So humility. Here's your exercise today. Okay? I want you to meditate what you want others to think about you. Now I want you to think, what do you do to get them to think that way? Why? Doing this exercise, I found out how much my movements, my thoughts are coming not from the humble platform, but the conception that I want to be the center. And I want to control. Why? Because you want to control and enjoy their power. Because when you want, you can't enjoy unless you control. Material. What does enjoyment mean? This is your desire, and you want the world to move according to your desire. And therefore you try to control the world. It's the same things. We want people to think something of us. We want to project that. Because if we have some vibhuti, we have some opulence, we can control. If we're beautiful, then people will surrender to us. If we're wealthy, people will surrender to us. If we're famous. And if we're not, we can talk it up so people may think that. It's so subtle, material consciousness. And it's so opposite from spiritual consciousness. Don't get depressed. Because I'm speaking of the ideals. There's an ideal. The ideal is prema. The ideal is that our consciousness is imbued with the highest love and devotion. And what does that mean? It means we only want to please. And we're moved by the desires of that which we want to please. I remember seeing this lecture by this great saint. And he was talking about, he was very, very humble, but he talked about when, in Krishna consciousness, Rupa Goswami, one of the great teachers, he listed stages that one goes through. And then there's a very, very high stage of devotion where the desire to serve God, the desire to have your heart filled completely with love, becomes your only objective. And then when he described it, it's described that when you have that conception, you have that hankering, you have that idea, you have that desire, right? What is perfection? Perfection is a heart of love. And the more intense it is, and the more inclusive it is, the higher your consciousness is. So there are people with love of God
They only want to serve, and they only want to serve everything. And they feel it. It's not just a conception. I should do this. They feel it. So there's a point in the bhakti, the devotion, where that rises up to such a degree in your heart. Satyaraj sends you a incredible quote about bhakti. What is bhakti? Do you remember what it was? Can you repeat it? Satyaraj, do you remember it? You sent it to Lakshmi too? And when
I have it here.
Yeah, what is it?
Hold on one second. That which enters into the melted mind and gives it the lasting shape of Govinda is called bhakti.
That which enters the melted mind
into the melted mind
and gives one lasting impressions of God, of Govinda. So that happens. That's an attachment. It's attachment to the divine. And one gets those impressions in the consciousness that one wants to serve God. And then they become so pronounced that at a particular time there's an energy of God that enters into your consciousness and your heart called bhava. And when you have that, he described, then I was captured. I was captured. He described the perfectional state as being captured. In the Bhagavatam, it describes it that when you get the perfectional state, you are arrested. Arrested by what? The love in your heart. As soon as you have love in your heart, you are controlled by the desires and wants of your beloved. And one moves in that direction. So here's the definition of humility that I think will help us reconcile. And it's and it works something like this. When you have an experience of something truly greater than yourself, when you surrender to the divine, and what does surrender to the divine mean? What does surrender mean? You accept that there's a principle and will greater than yourself. And we gave the example last time of just that it's kind of the hand. If the hand was independent and had its will, and then the hand realized that I am part of the body, and therefore I move by the desire of the body. I move by the will of the body. Because I'm part. The part surrenders to the whole. And by surrendering to the whole, it's serving everything. So what humility means is, true humility is, when you have a conception of that divine, you have the conception of something greater than yourself, which helps you to understand your position in relationship to that. It's kind of like this. Realizing the infinite makes you understand your infinitesimal nature. And you understand it with love. You understand it with love. You're part of something greater than yourself. I'll give you a simple example. Maybe Again, I'm trying to throw ideas. It's kind of, they describe in the Bhagavad Gita like you're sharpening an axe. You have to kind of cut it from different sides, and then the point becomes clear. So I'm still working on this. Here's an example. One summer, I went to the Himalayas. And I'll only do it once, because they have these roads that go around the mountain. There's no side rails, and there's these 1,000-foot drops. And Indian bus drivers, they don't have wheels like this. The wheels are like this. They kind of, and they're like full steam ahead going. And you look out the window, you don't see the road. Oh. I thought, this is the last time I'll do this. You don't see the road. But finally, we were going down. And I looked out at the Himalayas. I looked out at the Himalaya mountains. And when I looked out at the Himalayan mountains, I had to stop the bus. Get out. It's not only high, the valleys are deep. They go very far. And what was happening is I was feeling, this is great. It's vibhuti. It's power. It's connected with the divine. This is great. This is powerful. And how was I feeling? Relatively small in comparison. Now, is that a bad feeling? No. Because when you realize that, whether it is in majesty or it is in sweetness, it invokes a certain love in your heart. A certain, I gave the example last week, like a child in the arms of their mother, incapable, dependent, and sheltered. The child is feeling sheltered by the mother and happy in that shelter because it is a relationship of love. Actually, in what's called Rasa Shastra, the books describing love, they describe flavors of love. And what's the flavor of love of a young child? You are my maintainer. It's dependence. It's a feeling of love. It's a satisfaction in the heart because it's a shelter and it's who we are. So it's that type of feeling. It's when the infinitesimal is awakened to its real nature by an experience of the infinite. In a quality, in a principle, in a relationship. And I describe, it's happy dependence. It's a happy feeling. It's a feeling of shelter, it's a feeling of love. And it can be in so many different things. But somehow or other, and when that happens, then what happens is, when one realizes that I am part of something greater, then what happens is, one surrenders to that which is greater, which means one accepts the authority of that which is greater. One is no longer trying to exert oneself in the center, but one is trying to cooperate and surrender to what is greater than oneself. And that makes an indelible impression in the heart. And one remembers that. That connection one has with the divine. And then, what real humility is, when one has that kind of sense of an authority greater than oneself, that I am part of, when one has that sense and feels that love and devotion in one's heart, in that relationship, then in one's ordinary dealings, whenever that sense comes up, of independent control. Whenever that sense comes up in the consciousness, it becomes overwhelmed with those impressions of humility and the sense of the soul. And therefore, when one feels like, and one responds in any way that it comes up, when there's praise of one and one starts to feel, I am the center, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. And then one has a deep, deep sense of dependence in the heart. Even if one has powers, one actually reflects and understands that they're not intrinsically mine. They are instruments that are given to me to be used in a sense of service. And in that mood, one feels love. Because you cannot feel love in the platform of pride. Because there's no appreciation in the platform of pride. No matter what you get, what is given to you, when there's ego, there's no appreciation of it. And therefore, what is the verse that Lord Chaitanya said that should be put around one's neck? He said, Trinada pi sunichena, torora pi sahishnana, amanina madhanena. He said, if you're humble, you can chant always. Why, if you're humble, can you chant always? Because what can you do always? The only thing you can do always is love. Maharaj, welcome. So wonderful to see you.
Thank you.
Can someone get Maharaj a seat, please? I would say so many wonderful things about Maharaj, but he would be upset. Because he's actually humble. You could actually see it. Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj. Wonderful. So nice to see you. He was in Vrindavan for many years, in Mumbai for many years. It's very... And there's a dependence. One actually understands that one is dependent. Humility is also knowledge, actually. Because it's an understanding of who you are. There's a... I told you about that. There's some of you may know Mahamuni, who's a professor now. He joined in Tuaco, and me and Lakshmi were there. And he's Oxford University Press, there's a book that he's putting out of scholars on the concept of agency. Where is action actually initiated? How much participation do we have in what is action? In Bhagavad Gita, it says there's five factors of action, and only one is the person. There's so many. It's very, very limited. And then there's different thoughts of it. But whatever the conception is, it's actually very limited. What is actually intrinsically ours, if you actually know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, what is actually ours is limited. Especially the opulences. Beauty, it'll go. Right, strength will go, intelligence will go, professors get Alzheimer's. I had a friend, his father was a professor, got Alzheimer's, lost his intelligence. What to speak of beauty, it's going. It's going. They're not ours. So even that, so when one has that sense of the authority of something greater than myself. I always said, like in the yoga world, they always say, let go, let go. You have to let go. What do you let go of? Let go of that sense of false control. Things are moving beyond our control. In Sanskrit, there's a term, anga and angi. Angi is the body, anga is the limbs. The limbs are meant to serve the body. The body is the authority. The limbs are the parts to serve the body. We are not the angi. We are the anga. We are the parts. And when you realize that, Satyaraj told me yesterday, he mentioned this, this prabhu gave the example of the body. What happens when the hands realize that it's part of the body? It serves the body. And that's where its power is. In the service to the body comes the energy of the hand, comes the nourishment of the hand. So this is what a deeply spiritual person realizes. He realizes that it is not my world. I am in the world of God. And I am meant to serve. And one feels it so deeply in his heart. See, they feel I should serve everyone. I should serve everyone. They feel that deeply, deeply in their hearts. It's a whole shift in consciousness. You can look at it like this. I describe, ego means this. My desire becomes prominent. Humility means the needs of others become prominent. Ego means I am the center. Humility means I am on the periphery. Ego means I am the subject and things are objects. Humility means God is the subject. I am the object for his pleasure. I am the part. I am the anga. And I'm meant to serve. And people who have that consciousness, they always see the world in terms of the needs of others. They're so in that consciousness. I think one great saint once said, everyone in the world, they're trying to become guru. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru said, if you think you're a guru, if you think you're a Vaishnava, you're not even a Vaishnava. So everyone is trying for that position. But when someone actually becomes spiritually conscious, then what happens is, because if you're the hand, then the whole body is to be served by you. That's your consciousness. If you realize that you're the hand, the whole body is to be served by you. So you're thinking everyone is to be served, and I am the only, I'm the servant. So it says, when you enter, if you want to enter into the ultimate consciousness, just think how subtle it is. When by beauty, by strength, by power, by talk, by praise, by talking about ourselves, by exploiting others, by putting people down, by trying to get our things fulfilled, exploiting others. But when you actually become pure Vaishnava, that consciousness of humility, one looks at it like this. Rather than, I want to be the center. The statement was, when you go, if you want to go to the spiritual world, it is the land of gurus. And you're the only servant. Because you see everything to be served. The verse that Lord Chaitanya said, wear around your neck, Trinada Pi, Sunichena, Torora Pi. One should chant the holy name in a humble, thinking oneself lower than the store in the street. You think that's better than me? The grass feeds the cows, it produces milk, it makes thatch things, it's so humble, it's step by turn. Now, I'm going to leave some time for questions, but I just want to say, now, why humility? What is the benefit? There's no love without humility. There's no knowledge without humility. Think about it. If you put yourself in the center, can you experience love? If you put yourself in the center, do you have a realistic conception of God and yourself? Two beautiful, this is a story, beautiful story. When His Holiness Radhanath Swami came back to Vrindavan, after 10 years, and that must feel like an eternity. And he came by train to Mathura, and he walked on the bank of the Jamuna. And then he came to Vrindavan. And when he came into Vrindavan, I was the first person to see him. So now, what is your consciousness? I would say, where is my room? Is there any prasadam? Is the room clean? Is it the right room for me? What he said is, I remember it's very touching, he said, is there any service? Spiritual idea. Is there any service? And a person who has that mood, it's a joy. Because only from that platform does love flow. Only from the platform of service. It doesn't flow from the platform of ego. Only when I saw this book, someone was writing a book about japa. I presume that took me to an esoteric bookstore in Woodstock. There's so many incredible books. So there was one book, Rasanath, you probably, Ekanath Ishwaram or something, there's some South Indian person came to America. You know his name? Rasanath knew who he was. But he wrote a book about japa, one of the principles to think of others before yourself. I remember, too, one time I came to, if you read Journey Home also, there's a great Saint Ramesh Baba. He's still living. And I was going on Parikram. I got caught at the train going there. There's a train track. And there can be one train, there can be two trains, there can be five trains, there can be 10 trains. This was the all-time record. I remember I was with Yogya, too. It was one train after another, one train. And we were late. So by the Mother Kalini was with us. So we went, instead of the long way, we went to the Shriji temple first and then went to Mankutir. Afterwards, we got there at 2 o'clock. And in India, at 2 o'clock, people are doing one of two things. Well, they're doing one thing. They're sleeping. Or they may be eating. That's why the Radha Kund pastime, this is very esoteric, the Radha Kund pastime, the most intimate pastime, is at midday. Because when Radha Krishna get together in the secluded place in Govardhan Hill where no one else can come to, even if someone would come, they wouldn't come at that time of the day. There's even a saying, only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. But even in the winter, 1 o'clock. So we got there 1 or 2 o'clock, and then what happened? His assistant said, come see Maharaj, come see Maharaj, come see Maharaj. We said, I don't want to, you know, no problem. So he takes us to his room. And he has a room. It's an amazing room. It's four sides. You can see out over all Barsana. You got to walk like a plank to get there. We get in the room. He's sitting on the table and he's eating soup. And he looks at us. What would I say? I'm eating now. I am hungry. This room is meant for me eating. Right? It's my room. Right? That's what you see. Ego means you see things according to your own desires. Now, again, there's subtleties too. We do have needs that have to be fulfilled and protected to be able to serve. There are subtleties like that. But just look at his consciousness. He's eating. Probably he didn't eat anything all day and he's just taking a little soup. And we come in and what does he say? Is there any service for me? Is there any service for me? They're on that platform that they so identify and so much feel. The wonder, the glory, the happiness, I am part of something greater. And I have relationship with that. And there's so much love coming from the heart. What to speak, if you actually stay in that position, you actually hanker in that position. And then Krishna facilitates your desire by putting his loving energy in your heart. So that you can flow that energy back to him. That's what we actually are, ultimately. Ultimately, in the ultimate reality, we are receptacles. That's what we are. Rasa Vaisaha, the ultimate reality in this Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, is an exchange of this ultimate, pure, intense love. And when the heart actually has that desire and becomes purified in the appropriate way, then that energy can come to one. And one feels it. So beautiful, the consciousness. So there's many things that can be said, but this time limit. Just one reason. Why? Why humility? In the Shikshastakam, it's described so nicely. It describes that when one gives up offense, one experiences raga. Bhakti Sandarbhit says that if you come in contact with a very powerful soul, even if you don't know he's a powerful soul, you will feel the influence of their love. It says, except one person. It says, one who has a little knowledge and is proud. we prevent ourselves from experiencing what's already there. So the Shikshastakam, these prayers by Lord Chaitanya, after he says that, he says, there's raga, there's taste, but I am so unfortunate that I don't feel this. And then the next verse describes Trinada Pisani Chena. One should be more humble than a blade of grass, thinking oneself more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. Why? Because that's the protection. Just like you have eyes, if one speck of dirt gets into the eyes, there's so much pain. So in our heart, when we commit offense, which is due to ego, in the Yoga Sutras, the first yama, spiritual life begins with yama. What is it? How you deal with others. And the first principle of how to deal with others is nonviolence. And the commentaries say that as long as you harbor selfish desire, you will exploit others to some degree or another. And that's the beginning of spiritual life. What's the protection? So it's the cultivation of this feeling in the heart. Now, I have very little time, but I'm going to explain just two ways that it can be cultivated. One, I'm going to talk about ritual. But ritual has a bad connotation, because it has a connotation of something you do thoughtlessly. But I'm going to speak about ritual as something you do thoughtfully. And what is ritual? It's to conform your daily practice to something greater than yourself. Even the cult, you know, I was just thinking, even when a child grows up, right, in a proper family, you can see how they're conditioned. In India, sometimes, or in other places too, they have kind of joint families, right? So when the child gets born into the family, right, his desire, even there's so much love, cannot become prominent. There's already a world, a community that you enter into that already has certain expectations, certain principles. So even if you get a lot of love, but in a nuclear family, the child comes into the family, they're only going to have one child maybe, and especially the first child, then what happens? That child's desire determines what that world is. Right? It determines what that world is. It's against the principle of humility. I've seen it. I remember one lecture, Radhanath Swami was telling, he went to this rich person in India, they had a room downstairs with like 1,000 toys for this kid, millionaires, 1,000 toys. And the kid was not satisfied. Because you're not satisfied. Because satisfaction is the heart. And the heart only feels love and experiences love when it's humble. A spoiled child never experiences love from the parents. So you see, a child, he grows into a world. So therefore, community is so important. Marriage is also important. If it's done in the proper way, because then what happens is, all of a sudden the person realizes, right, this world is not just about me. This world is about others. We're not cultured in that way. In the Bhagavatam, it says, Acharya mam vijaniyam navamanye. It says, you should accept the Acharya as my very self. Do not envy him in any way. And I thought, oh, this is an amazing verse. But then I was reading the commentaries of that verse. It says, it's not talking about the guru. It's talking about your parents. It's talking about your teacher. It's talking about anyone who represents some knowledge, represents the authority, the principles that are beyond your own authority. It's respected. It's cultured. Accepting a proper teacher, which means it should be a teacher who is in that consciousness, not a teacher that's looking down, I have so many students, but a teacher that's looking up, I am a student. I am the object of my teacher's desires, and as a service for my teacher, then you serve that person, you enter into the world of service, not the world of exploitation. But that type of relationship also. People would have teachers. Just think of it. Let's say you really wanted to learn music, and here was the most incredible maestro in the world. Then you accept that. They had authority. And you enter into that relationship of shelter. Just think. What ritual means, even that. Even in a proper home, what do they have? They have the deities. What does that represent? The deity represents that it's God's world, and I am in that world. Even eating cultivates humility if one only takes prasadam. Prasadam, that which is all, it's a whole different consciousness. I remember when I grew up, the mother wasn't a good mother unless she had one big drawer with unlimited cookies. When I was young, I would eat at 6 o'clock at night, I'd eat 7 o'clock at night, I'd eat 8 o'clock at night, I'd eat 10 o'clock at night, midnight, going in the refrigerator. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. What does prasada mean? You can't do that. You have to reorient your consciousness. Things are meant for God's pleasure, and I take it as mercy. Even the deity worship, you offer different things. It's not just an offering, it's an offering of heart. It's putting you in the proper position. You offer incense. Incense is fragrance. It represents the earth. The earth is for God. Your incense. Then there's a flame. Lamp is fire. Fire is for water. Water is for God. Earth, water, fire, air. Peacock fan. The air is ether. The subtle chamara. The subtle chamara. All. Okay. And then the main way to cultivate humility, of course, that mood of service, looking through the eyes in terms of seva-bha, it's just a completely different consciousness than selfishness. A real spiritual person. See, what ritual means too is, if you put the body in the right place, the consciousness will follow. It's not even psychological experiments, if you lift your head up and breathe in deeply, you have one consciousness. If you fold your hands and bow your head, you have another consciousness. You have another consciousness. You pay your obeisances, you have another consciousness. The head goes down, the heart goes up. There's a culture. There's a world. How one lives to put the body in a place where the mind and consciousness will follow. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, it describes charity. It describes austerity. What's the other one, Rasana? Charity, austerity. There were three things. What?
Well,
how do you emphasize?
Charity, austerity, speech, mind.
No, there's austerity, charity. There's three things that are
sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
That's right.
What are those? It's all to purify you and put you. What does charity mean? Why should one perform charity? To purify the consciousness in relationship to money. Always thinking that's an object, I get it, I can now have more control with it. So there's always, in a spiritual community, there's always some sense of charity. There's always some sense of sacrifice. Meaning we don't go just by our impulses, we go by principles. But the most important thing is experiencing the divine. Focusing the consciousness on the divine. And when you focus your consciousness on the divine, you feel the glory and sweetness of the divine. And you start to become happy in your dependence and relative position. To such an extent that when true people have bhakti, and this is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, they can't be praised. Nothing can move them to the center. Okay, we'll end with kirtan. Ganesham, you want to play? Okay, before kirtan, any questions, comments? Satyaraj? What?
You mentioned seeing the divine, darshan.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that in general, people think of darshan as coming to see the deity. He said real darshan is recognizing that the deity is seeing you. So in that sense, also putting God in the center.
It's a completely different consciousness. You're being seen. Just like the wives of the Brahmins. When they came before Krishna, because they made so much sacrifice to come before Krishna, when they came before Krishna, Krishna smiled. And the commentators say, that's real darshan. Real darshan is not, I'm seeing the Lord. I'm the subject, that's the object. No, I'm the object, that's the subject, that's the seer. And the whole spiritual process is you go before God, you go before the deities, to give them pleasure. And how do you give them pleasure? When you have humility and love. So 5 minutes of kirtan, and then we'll end. So let's focus on the divine.
Thank you.